Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for getting up early, especially those of you who have come from far away. And a few months ago, when Lee asked me to participate in this great session that he's put together, his email specifically stated that he was interested in a talk addressing a federal agency perspective on the quantification of wetland soil properties and functions. So today I'll be speaking about a federal agency perspective on the quantification of wetland soil properties and functions. And so my goals for the next 20 minutes here are to talk a little bit about where the agencies are right now in terms of quantifying soil and more specifically wetland soil functions. And one of the main goals that we have with our group in Vicksburg, Mississippi at the research station there is really trying to bring a more science-based and data-driven approach to the way that we look at soil properties and functions. And so we'll be talking a little bit about that today. So the talk's broken up into a couple components. You'll see those running along the bottom of the screen as we go. So we're going to talk a little bit about why does the federal agencies have a need to assess functions and specifically wetland functions. And the agencies have gone over a period of 20 years, but really quite a bit in the last decade, to innumerable rapid assessment methods. And so we'll talk about why do the agencies need these rapid assessment methods, what are some of the good things about them, and some of their challenges. And then I thought it'd be important for this group, because it is a technical session here, that we actually look at some of these assessment methods and see how they work. So we'll look at how can we validate a rapid wetland assessment method in bottomland hardwood forests down in the lower southeastern United States, and then how can the sort of data that we generate through the quantification of these properties and functions help us develop tools for better management. And so we're going to talk specifically about developing some restoration trajectories based on the data that we've collected. So why do the agencies care about these functions and why do we need to assess these functions? Well, there's two main reasons. The first is that we have a number of environmental impacts that we see across the country. For example, just the acreage of wetlands in the lower 48 states has decreased by more than half since European settlement. In 2013, the EPA came out with their big stream survey for the nation, and they say at least 55 or more percent of the streams are degraded or in a poor condition. And those losses of aquatic ecosystems, wetlands and streams and otherwise, have resulted in significant losses of the functions and benefits that those ecosystems provide for us as a society. So in order to quantify those losses, we need to have some sort of method for assessing the functions that these systems provide. And also this is tied up in the regulations. The Clean Water Act of 1972 and then the following amendments came out and recognized that wetlands play a key role in things like decreasing flood risk and improving water quality, as well as providing habitat and a number of other important functions. And in the 1980s, the Clean Water Act legislation and additional rulemaking at the federal level led to a no net loss policy of wetland functions. So we have kind of a if you break it, you buy it mentality in the agencies, that if you're going to go into a wetland area and have some sort of development or something else that decreases the amount of function there, you need to mitigate for that and replace it somewhere else. This was further clarified in 2008 with the 2008 mitigation rule, which is developed by both the Corps of Engineers and the EPA together. And the mitigation rule requires that we have consistent approaches for determining mitigation credits. We have to look at ecological performance standards for restored wetlands, and we have to have some monitoring criteria, again, in these areas where we're doing mitigation and restoration. So these regulations, in brief, necessitate the federal agencies to do ecosystem assessment. And just to look a little bit more specifically about what some of these regulations and others have said, the Clean Water Act specifically indicates that we need to look at the functional organization in the way that habitats function, and that when we do restoration, we have to look at replacing that function to a level comparable to what a natural habitat would do for us. And it's not just in the federal regulations, also from the scientific community. We have folks like Ebersol and Dr. Lamberti and others, mostly working with streams, clearly stating that restoration projects should return ecosystems to a condition that promotes re-expression of the natural ecosystem structure and function. Okay, so we have a clear mandate, both from the law and from the scientific perspective, that when we look at these ecosystems, we need to focus on what are these systems functioning as. And we'll get into a little more specifically about the soil functions as we go along here. So why do we need to have rapid assessment methods? Well, just the Corps of Engineers alone across the country makes over 70,000 wetland determinations per year. Okay, so that's a big number. It ranges between 60 and 80,000, depending on what the housing market is doing. So when we were in the boom, we were clear into the 80s. Then we dropped back down into the 60,000 range with the recession, and now we're starting to creep back up into the low 70s in terms of the number of wetland determinations that's done each year. Okay, a number of those wetland determinations results in some sort of permitted activity within a wetland or other aquatic ecosystem. Okay, so these are things like taking a wetland and turning it into a parking lot. They're also things like going in and mitigating or restoring areas that have been degraded in the past. And a large proportion of those 70,000 determinations requires an assessment of the functions that those wetlands are performing for us. Okay. The Corps of Engineers staff are not scientists. They may have some scientific background, but they have very limited time, limited training, and especially limited funds in order to conduct these wetland assessments. So we have a lot of assessments, and we have a lot of constraints for the folks that are out there doing the assessments or evaluating the assessments. And so we also have a strong dedication to public service. One of our missions is that we are a customer service agency, and that when someone from the public comes to us and asks us for a permit, we have a clock that starts ticking when that paperwork comes in the door. And so 96% of these 70,000 wetland determinations are completed within 60 days. So the timelines that we look at are 60 days, and then if we need more information, they will kick it up to 120 days. So we're looking at relatively short timelines. So we don't have the time, the expertise, or the staff to conduct full-blown scientific studies. And so we go down this road of rapid assessment. And just to give you an idea of the number of these rapid assessments that are out there, some work that was done by Dr. Finnessy at Kenyon College, and then we followed up with a subsequent study, found over 60 of these wetland assessments going on across the country. Okay, so here's just a map of some wetland assessments that we've developed out of our office across the country, and there are many, many more. So hopefully by now I've convinced you that we need to assess functions in the environment, and that because of our constraints, we need to have rapid approaches to assessment. And so, again, one of the main goals of my group is to try and bring a more science and data-driven perspective into how we do these assessments. And so I want to look at two case studies that from recently published literature that we've done in the last year, and look at two case studies, and I want to see if these rapid assessments are working well. We are going to focus on the soil biogeochemical functions that these wetland ecosystems provide. And then with any field study where we're out collecting data, what could possibly go wrong? Okay, so I know that this talk is going to go better than the day I sat down in Louisiana with some of the folks here in the room, because nobody's going to step on an alligator. They don't have that here in Long Beach. And also, we learned that day that the airboat works really good when you're on the river, but doesn't work so good when it's in the river. Okay, so that was my first and hopefully last experience of sinking an airboat that day. I didn't know that was possible. For the record, I was digging soil pits on shore when the boat went down. All right, so the first case study we'll look at is examining these restored bottomland hardwood forests in the Mississippi Valley. And the reason that I think this is a good study to look at is because these bottomland hardwood forests are some of the most impacted ecosystems in the United States. More than 78% of the bottomland hardwood forests in the Mississippi Valley were converted to agriculture. And now we're starting to restore many of those, a lot for waterfowl habitat, but also for things like soil functions, notably denitrification and water quality impacts, trying to improve the situation in the Gulf of Mexico with the hypoxic zone. Okay, so to date, over 500,000 acres have been restored in the Lower Mississippi Valley. And what they do with these restoration techniques is they take these very intensively farmed field areas, which you can see in the first figure there, and this is almost exclusively cotton, soybean, corn, and increasingly rice. And so you can even see some of the rice checks in this portion of the figure there. And this is large industrial scale agriculture. And so they have gone out and extensively manipulated these fields. Because of the levee protection that goes on throughout the Mississippi Valley, the hydrology to these sites has been largely altered. And they go out to these areas and they essentially stop farming them, and they just plant trees. And that's the restoration technique. That's it. So there's no hydrologic modification. They don't go in and create microtopography or anything like that. They just plant the appropriate species of trees for the area. Okay. And then they just leave them. That's it. So restoration done. And eventually they do become nice bottomland hardwood forests, but you do have a significant period where you kind of just have this dog hair junk in there. But they will develop, and once the trees get up, they get a nice open bottom, and the canopy exclusion, you get pretty good forests in there. And I should point out this work is published in 2013 in the SSSAJ. So what sort of rapid assessment parameters are we talking about here? We'll go through a list of about 13 different things that we collect. And the idea of these rapid assessments is that they can be completed in one day or less. Okay, so essentially a half day of on-site field data collection and a half day of kind of desktop remote sensing office work. And so the off-site parameters or variables that we collect are things like the core area. How big is this chunk of wetland? We look at the habitat connectivity, how much of it is connected to suitable habitat. How large is that habitat? Does the site exhibit the sort of microtopography that we associate with these types of wetlands? And what's the flood frequencies on the sites? Okay, so those are all things that we get off the desktop before we go out into the field. And then we have a number of field measurements. And these are all, again, really rapid and are used to estimate the functionality of these ecosystems. So we look at things like ground cover, the density of saplings, the amount of woody debris on the site. Okay, we measure the depth of the A and O horizons. We look at the tree diameter, the number of snags, and tree density, the number of logs on the ground, and what species of trees are there. Okay, so you'll notice that these things are all relatively easy to measure. They're all something that we could go out with our various backgrounds and do today. Okay, the people who are doing these, again, are not soil scientists, so But, you know, you can show someone what an A horizon looks like and what an O horizon looks like, and they can measure that with a ruler. We take those factors and put them through these empirical multimetric equations that create a functional score. And if we want to know how well the rapid assessments are working, we need to compare those scores with some direct measurement of wetland function. And so this is where the science piece comes in. Okay, this is the part that I get excited about. Okay, so we have these rapid assessment scores. They come out of these completely empirical equations, and we want to know, well, how well do these equations work? So in order to determine that, we compare the scores with these direct measures of wetland function. So we're collecting research data like soil carbon and nitrogen, total organic carbon, loss of ignition, microbial biomass carbon, potentially mineralizable nitrogen, and then direct measurements of hydrology on the sites. And so if the rapid assessment scores correspond to these direct measures, then we have more confidence that the rapid assessments are working as they should be working. So let's take a look at some data. And so the next couple of slides will have these graphs. And just keep in mind that on the y-axis is always going to be the rapid assessment score. And then on the x-axis is the direct measurement that we're looking at. And so in this case, we're looking at the ability of these ecosystems to cycle nutrients. Okay, so nutrient cycling on the y-axis. And we're going to compare that with soil carbon and microbial biomass carbon. And you can see in the top figure that we get pretty good agreement between the rapid assessment score and the amount of carbon there. So as the sites age, we would expect them to be accumulating carbon in the soils, and that's good. But carbon accumulation by itself is not a function. Okay, that's just something that happens in wetlands. And so in order to actually designate this as being a nutrient cycling function, we need to add another parameter into the mix. And so in the lower figure, we're looking at microbial biomass carbon, which is the capacity of the soil microbes to process the carbon that they come in contact with. And you can see that we also get a strong relationship between the assessment score and the amount of microbial biomass carbon in the sites. Okay, and so by combining this soil concentration data with this processing mechanism by looking at the microbial activity, then we can say that these sites, as they age and mature, are clearly performing increased soil functioning by cycling these nutrients. Very good. All right. Just to touch on another example, here is export organic carbon. The same approach. We looked at total organic carbon, and we saw a fair relationship there. But just having more organic carbon is not a function. Okay, so then we look at the hydrology, which demonstrates the ability to move that carbon out of the system. Okay, so again, by coupling these things together, we show increased soil function. So briefly for that, conclusions for that, we compare the rapid assessment scores with these proxy measures of function, and we saw good relationships there. We had significant statistical values for all the parameters that we looked at. This promotes confidence in our methods. The scores did increase between 17 and 23% over the period of record that we looked at, 20 years. But even those 20-year-old sites still fall significantly below natural unimpaired systems in terms of their functioning. Okay. So no surprise there. They're doing better, but not quite there. I'll just touch briefly on some other research that we did looking at developing trajectory scores using this data. And this is published in Ecological Indicators. And so with this, we're looking at the same parameters, so those same 15 data collections. And we want to know, can they be used to develop some restoration trajectories so that as a manager, I can say that my restoration site is where it should be given a certain amount of time. And we did find four of the variables were really good at developing these trajectories. Sapling density, ground cover, and then the soil horizon thicknesses. So I'll focus on those. So here's the data for that. On the y-axis, we have the A horizon thickness. And then on the x-axis, we have the stand age. And you can see that we get really good curves within the first 20 years. And then in the second graph, when we look at the mature natural stands at 80 years, we can suggest that there's some sort of asymptotic relationship going on here. The problem is we don't have the intermittent data because the oldest restored sites are only 20 years old. So that's where we need to get some more data. And so what we demonstrated in this paper is that we do have variables that we can look at to see if the restoration projects are working. We can develop these trajectories, but we need additional research to fill in those middle age stand variables. So in conclusion, the federal agencies are required to assess these ecological functions, including soil functions. We did find that rapid assessment methods can be a useful proxy measurement for what's going on with the functioning in these ecosystems. We can use them to develop useful tools like the trajectories, but we do need to have more research looking at emerging impacts, things like mountaintop mining that are new impacts to the environment, and we need to have some standards. So because we have so many of these rapid assessments out there, we need more approaches like this to validate those things. And with that, I thank you for your time, and maybe have time for one question?
No, I think we'll hold them.
Okay, thanks. We'll hold the questions. Thank you.